The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Hi, I'm Peter Mitchell. I'm a director of Elysium Capital in Singapore, and I also consult to the Australian real estate financial advisory firm Emerge Capital in relation to bringing offshore capital into debt and equity opportunities in Australia.
And I'm Mike Consul, your host, and I should also say that Peter Mitchell is former CEO of APREA, which is the Asian Public Real Estate Association, a nonprofit organization that promotes and represents the real estate sector in the Asia-Pacific region. And he was the CEO for 8 years before stepping down. And Peter Mitchell recently spoke with Jennifer Malloy, editor of Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific, about his thoughts on the current state of the Asian real estate market. I wanted to, and that was actually, that conversation was transcribed and put in the magazine. I wanted to talk to Peter in a little bit more detail about that. So Peter Mitchell, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Thanks very much, Mike. Glad to be here.
So by your telling, the Australia real estate debt sector is undergoing substantial systemic change and creating some new opportunities for investors, both local investors and international investors, and institutional as well as high net worth retail investors. I was interested to see that Australian banks are going through a significant withdrawal from construction real estate loans, particularly in development and construction finance, and this has been happening during an unprecedented nationwide construction boom there in Australia. This is creating some opportunities then for non-bank lenders, according to what you had said. Let's start with why banks are retrenching from development and construction finance at a time when things really are looking so robust in the so-called land down under. What's going on there, Peter?
Yeah, so it's not just the nationwide construction boom, Mark. It's also we're seeing strong population growth in the major cities and record government infrastructure spending as well. So, yes, it is a conundrum. There are two principal reasons why the commercial banks are in retreat. The first is that the financial services regulator, which is called the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, APRA, has implemented over the last couple of years a number of what they call macro-prudential policies, requiring banks to tighten lending policies in the real estate sector, and those restrictions don't apply to non-bank lenders. APRA has told banks that they need to improve balance sheet resilience by toughening scrutiny of new borrowers' ability to service loans. They've also placed caps on investment lending and privately pressed lenders to refine lending criteria. The other main reason is that in December 2017, a government inquiry and the title is The Misconduct in the Banking, Superannuation and Financial Services Industry, was established, and that inquiry delivered its report towards the end of 2018, and that report contains substantial findings against banks as well as other financial services players, and a particular focus of the inquiry was on responsible lending standards, and banks have responded to that report, declaring that they're going to make it harder for loan applications to be approved. One of the other things I think that's driving APRA, the financial services regulator, is that the four major commercial banks in Australia until recently for around about 90% of the commercial real estate debt market, which is very high compared to other developed economies. And that's, I think, another reason that's been driving the regulator.
What exactly are the sins that have been committed by the banking industry? Regulators have said you violated what?
Well, I think without going into the report in detail, they are talking about lending standards that are too loose. They've imposed, coming out of, well, this is not the inquiry, more so, but APRA more generally, they've imposed what they call a speed limit at 10% annual growth of property investor lending, just to try and reduce that exposure of the commercial banks to real estate debt. But the overall message, I think, coming out of the inquiry itself is just a need to tighten up lending standards.
Interesting. So do you think that Australian banks are a little less circumspect about lending standards because Australia really came through the global financial crisis fairly or maybe entirely unscathed? You know, the fact of the matter is that Australia's got the longest running record of growth, year-over-year growth. And what is it at now, like 26 years or something like that with unimpeded growth, even through the financial crisis? Do I have that right, Peter?
Yep. Yes, you do, Mike. I think it's almost 27 years now of without a recession. It's quite amazing. And with that infrastructure growth and solid population growth, particularly in the major cities of Melbourne and Sydney, you know, the fundamentals for development, construction, you know, residential lending are very strong.
Now, do you think that, so my theory then, uninformed theory, is that because the banks did not go through the crucible, they're not as circumspect or not as, shall we say, timid about going ahead and being a little bit more liberal with the lending because they actually didn't go through that sort of comeuppance like American banks did and banks all over the world did.
Yeah, look, it's a good theory. It would be hard to, you know, kind of analyze the relativities of that as to you know, how Australian banks have been traveling without threats of recession over such a long period of time. All I can say is that the financial services regulator does keep a very close eye on the commercial banks because they play such an important part in the Australian financial services system. Although these restrictions that have come in over the last 2 years, you know, there's quite a suite of them. I really can't comment on the extent to which Australian bank lending practices might have, you know, become less exact, you know, because of you know, so many years of continuous growth.
Now, you have mentioned that the opportunities presented in the non-bank lending sector have not been lost on private equity firms and other financial firms. Give us a few examples.
Sure. So in late 2017, about 18 months ago, KKR acquired a non-bank lender called Pepper Group. Around about the same time, Blackstone acquired an 80% interest in a Melbourne-based lender called La Trobe Financial, with the stated objective of doubling its loan book in 3 years. Cerberus Capital Management early last year acquired the local operations of another non-bank lender, Bluestone Group. In the middle of last year, it was announced that CPPIB would participate in a $500 million Australian dollar seed lending to a newly established fund with the Australian firm Challenger to invest in middle market real estate loans in Australia and New Zealand. So they're some of the deals that have happened where major offshore investors have identified the opportunities that are presenting themselves in the Australian non-bank real estate lending sector. And I'm familiar with a number of others that I can't mention in this interview in which we're involved, where other participants in the Australian non-bank lending So they're looking for capital both at a platform level and also to be able to write more loans.
Interesting. Well, you gave us two household names with KKR and Blackstone,
yep.
So we get the idea for sure. So what kind of niches or types or forms of non-bank lending is taking place? I'm curious as to whether this money is being channeled in a particular way, but there are certain niches, or there's certain types of loans or financing going on here. What can you say about that, Peter?
Yeah, so the Australian debt managers are actually showing a lot of flexibility, and they're really responding to what the foreign investors' interest in the sector is. So you could broadly break the non-bank lending sector up into two parts. There is the small loan sector, which is loans of less than 30 million Australian dollars, and there's the kind of the larger loan sector. That small loan sector has a lot of local retail investment in it, self-managed superannuation funds or self-managed pension funds in Australia are a major component of the financial services industry in Australia and are major investors into these smaller loans. The Australian debt managers, they have their own niches, so that there is one, for example, in fact there's more than one, who focus entirely on secured first mortgage loans with fairly conservative loan-to-value ratios, so 55% to 65%. They provide very conservative but compelling risk-adjusted returns. So a first mortgage loan product could be delivering at the moment around about 8.25% after fees and before tax. So there are various kinds of loan structures depending upon the investor's return appetite. It could be just purely first mortgage loans. It could be a mix of first mortgage and stretch, first mortgage and mezz or pure mezz, depending upon the risk profile of the investor. The loans can also be bundled up as pure development and construction loans, or which generate the highest returns, with the exception of land loans, which are pre-entitlement loans, which generate higher returns with higher risk. And they could be bundled up also with investment loans, which have the smallest spread to bank lending rates. But again, it depends upon the investor's risk appetite. And there are also different structures. So there are commingled fund opportunities, separate accounts, and direct co-investment with the manager, again depending upon the investor's risk appetite. For Asian investors, there is at the risk of generalisation, there is a tendency to prefer direct participation rather than investing through funds.
So these non-bank lenders are offering what kinds of opportunities for investors? Are we talking about simply an institution or an ultra high net worth individual committing dollars to a new fund that's being raised by KKR or Blackstone or some other firm, and then trusting them, of course, to do good work with that money? Is that the size of it, or are there some other dimensions to this?
Yeah. So there are funds in which investors can put their money, which is both retail and local institutional investors in Australia and foreign investors. So there are commingled funds opportunities where, and as you rightly say, where the investors are entrusting the management of those funds with the manager. So for foreign investors, there is a lot of close analysis on manager selection, of course, the scale, the position of the manager in the market, track record, and so on. And I should just say on that, Mike, that because this is a part of the market that is providing such wonderful opportunities, of course, there are a number of new entrants coming into the market, and including entrants who, with compelling individuals running the funds who are looking to set up new funds to invest in real estate debt. The problem with those new entrants, of course, is that at a corporate level, they don't have any track record, and that makes it very difficult for them to attract those funds. So the managers who have been around for some time, like some of the ones that I mentioned earlier, clearly do have an established track record and find it much easier to attract capital for their funds. But in addition to funds, as I say, there are other investors who would prefer to put their money into a separate account, or more likely at the family office and high net worth individual level, who would prefer to invest directly alongside the sponsor.
Now, how attractive are these non-bank lending returns for investors? What can they expect in terms of returns for their commitment? And is the returns from non-bank lenders something in excess of traditional bank lenders?
As I mentioned earlier, the rate of return being offered to investors net of fees for a pure secured first mortgage product is around 8.25% at the moment. I also mentioned that it's particularly in the construction and development loan area that banks have been retreating, and it's in that space and in pre-entitlement loans where you tend to find significant spreads between bank rates and non-bank lender rates. So that first mortgage loan return of 8 to 8.25% on a risk-adjusted return basis is pretty compelling, and you can see that for blended products where investors are prepared to take on a little bit more risk, where first mortgage loans might be blended with some stretch or mezz, or even some pre-entitlement loans, you could easily get to a return to investors net of fees of north of 10%. And the other thing just to factor in there is the tax position, where foreign investors generally, pension funds are exempt, but foreign investors generally have to pay a withholding tax. The amount of withholding tax on income from a debt investment product is normally capped at 10%, could be a lot less, is a lot less than the amount of withholding tax that an investor would expect to pay on a real estate equity investment. So even both after fees and after tax, it's a pretty compelling return proposition. And as I say, the spreads against bank rates for development, construction and pre-entitlement loans are quite significant.
So you've already addressed this to some degree, Peter, but maybe going a little bit deeper on it, I want to ask about the fact that there's always these regulatory and tax regimes at play and with any type of investment. And so what about that cost structure and whatever strictures are involved with regard to non-bank debt investments in Australia? How complicated is this? Is there some other factors there that investors should know about that you haven't already highlighted?
Yeah, it's interesting. I obviously don't profess to be an expert in regulation, US regulation and tax, Mike, but it's interesting just in talking to institutional investors around the region who have done this kind of homework and made the comparison. That they find the regulatory and tax structure, at least for debt investments in Australia, to be a lot simpler than the US. like just investing in the US, it's obviously essential for investors to get proper advice before they, you know, commit to anything in writing.
Our guest has been Peter Mitchell. He's director of Elysium Capital based in Singapore. Peter, I want to thank you for taking the time and walking us through this interesting turn of events in Australia and some bona fide opportunities for investors domestically and abroad. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Mike.